Go ahead and call Senate Transportation Committee to order. Time now is 1:32 p.m. February 8th, 2018. Present today are Senator Bishop, Senator Egan, and myself, Stedman. We have a quorum to do business. The other two senators have other issues going on. They may or may not show up. We are going to start a process here dealing with, well, we started with airports, but now we're going to move on to broader areas dealing with the statewide planning improvement program, better known as the STIP, which is federally funded projects around the state. We have asked DOT to put a presentation together, come forward, and kind of walk the committee through the different regions around the state in the transportation arena, what's on the schedule to be constructed or reconstructed. Also, we'll be having discussions dealing with the potential improvements that may be needed dealing with gas line, major infrastructure improvements to deal with that issue over the next few months also. So with that, we have Mike Vigue today from DOT. He is the STIP master, and he will unwind this mysterious process and help the committee understand what we're doing. And if he can introduce himself for the record, and who he represents, and then just kind of take us through your presentation. There's only three of us. We'll kind of stop you when we have questions, and we'll just roll through it. And wherever we end, we'll pick up. If we're run over, we'll just stop, pick up at the next meeting.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Mike Vigue. I'm the Director of Program Development for the Department of Transportation. And as you said, we're going to go through a tutorial, I guess, of what the STIP is, how we develop the STIP, and I will try my best to unwind it and explain all the fun federal requirements that we have with the STIP. So we'll talk about what is the STIP, how the STIP is regulated, what are the unique transportation funding things that we have going on in Alaska. How we selected projects to include in the STIP, what programming considerations exist, and what some of the STIP tools are. Near the end of the presentation, I've got some screenshots from our website. I'll walk you through those where you can see how to get into the STIP, search the STIP, look for projects, and maybe help understand what's going on there. So the STIP is the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program. It's federally required. For us to spend federal highway funds and federal transit funds. So it's approved jointly by both of those agencies. They're both USDOT. So any project that we move forward that's funded with either Federal Highway Administration money or Federal Transit Administration money has to be included in the STIP, and then that document must be approved by both federal agencies. It can include non-federally funded projects. The only requirement is if there's a USDOT action. So there's some language in the regs that say regionally significant. The definition of regionally significant is if there's a USDOT action. So a pretty typical example of that would be in the lower 48 where they have access-controlled interstates. You could do a new interchange on the interstate using state money, but you still need to get approval from Federal Highway. So even if you were doing a project like that with state money, you would still have to include it in the STIP because there's a decision that and an approval process that Federal Highway has to follow. We don't typically have too many of those up here. So one of the big questions that we always get is, why aren't projects in the STIP? How come my project's not in the STIP? Well, the STIP has to be fiscally constrained. So we have to program the STIP to the amount of money, both federal highway and federal transit funding, that we believe that we will receive. We're not allowed to over-program the STIP. So if we get about $500 million a year in federal highway, funds, we can't program for obligation more than that, or Federal Highway won't approve the STIP. So that fiscally constrained piece is very important, and they hold us to that pretty tightly. It's a public information document. We have a process. Right now we have a current draft STIP that we put out for public comment. Public comment runs 45 days on a new STIP, so it'll be out for public comment until March 15th. Our STIP covers 4 years, so the new STIP is 2018, 2019, 2020, 2021. In order to make changes to the STIP, you either have to do an amendment, and an amendment's a more formal process where you make changes and you put it out for another additional public comment of 30 days, or an administrative modification. We call them admin mods. Those are a little bit easier. It's generally an administrative change to the project. It's not significant change in an estimate of cost or in scope of work or termini. So it's more of a small change. And we can do those by just informing Federal Highway that we're doing that. It doesn't take the public process like an amendment does or a brand new STIP. Each funding type that's in the STIP has unique requirements. So as we go through, we'll see some of those. It's greatly reduced from what it was before. Under Safety Lou and previous federal authorizations, there were a lot more program codes. When they passed MAP 21, when Congress passed MAP 21 in 2012, they reduced the number of program codes, which helped us, made things a little bit simpler, hopefully made it simpler for everyone to understand, certainly made it a little bit easier to manage the funding that we were receiving.
For those watching at home, could you try and explain what that is, the federal program? The MAP, do you think you used a...
Oh, for that, yeah, so... So the way we get the way they set up the federal program is Congress passes an authorization bill. That's different from the annual appropriation bills. The authorization bill, that's the Safety Lou, MAP 21, FAST Act. Those are multi-year program authorization bills. So that's where they determine how much money each state is going to receive. That's where they put in place program requirements. Things like funding for freight programs. So when they passed the FAST Act in 2016, they created a new program called the National Highway Freight Program. That was in the authorizing bill, and that's where they lay out all the requirements for that and then identify how the funding is allocated to each of the different states. So the STIP is regulated under federal statute and regulation. I'm not going to get into a whole lot of detail there because we've all read laws and regulations, and they can be fairly dry. But if anyone wants to go look things up, on the federal website at the bottom of this slide, there's a link to FAST Act. FAST Act is the current authorizing legislation, and it's codified in 23 United States Code Chapter 1 is where we get all our federal aid money. 23 Code of Federal Regulations, Section 450, is where all of the planning regulations are identified. So this is just an idea of what's out there. This link at the bottom of this slide will bring you to the screenshot that you're seeing. Each one of those blue lines is a document, a PDF document that will come up. Most of them are 1 to 3 pages long, and they provide in-depth information on each one of the different programs that Federal Highway administers. So it's also regulated by state statute and regulation. 19 AS 15 is the law, and 17 AAC, the Alaska Administrative Code, is where the planning regulations are. Again, screenshot showing where those are. The point here is that there's lots of law and regulation that we have to follow, both state and federal, in order to comply with planning requirements, programming requirements, and use the federal money. So a few things that are unique about us up here in Alaska. So we are what they call a donee state, meaning that for every dollar that we are contributing to the Highway Trust Fund on the federal level, and that's the majority of that comes from federal motor fuel taxes on gasoline and diesel. For every dollar that we contribute to that highway trust fund, we receive about $5 back in federal appropriations. So we got a pretty good deal. I mean, we not only do we get $5 for every one that's attributed to us, so every time you go to the gas pump, you fill up your car, whether you're using gas or diesel, there's a federal tax that the IRS collects at the distributor, and that gets, we file reports that come from the Department of Revenue to the federal government, and we get allocated our contribution to the Highway Trust Fund, and then that's part of the formula that when they calculate the money that we get back. Another thing that's unique about us up here is we have an exemption in state and federal law that allows us to spend federal highway dollars on any public road. So public roads are functionally classed. So interstate is a functional class, an arterial is a functional class, a major collector. Those three functional classifications are eligible for federal aid funds in the lower 48. In Alaska, we have an exemption. We can use federal aid funds on minor collectors and local roads. We can also use federal funds on some of the transportation facilities in some of the villages, like boardwalks and things like that. That's unique for us. That's not a typical thing down in the lower 48.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, that would, like in Juneau here, that would include municipal roads if DOT wanted to fix the road up to the Capitol?
Through the chair, yes, that would be correct. Yep. The other thing is we're very reliant on federal funds. I don't think I'm telling anybody anything they don't already know. We've all been involved with the Capitol budget. There's not a lot of state funding available right now, so the vast majority of our Capitol budget, our Capitol program, is federal funds. We get enough state match to cover what we need to in order to use up all of our federal funds, but for the last few years there hasn't been any extra, so we're primarily a federal program. That brings up another uniqueness that we have is our federal funds are 90% of projects, as opposed to the lower 48, which is typically 80-20. In the federal law, they have something called a sliding scale, which is calculated based on the square miles of federal land in your state. And Alaska has a lot of federal land, so our sliding scale gives us an additional 10%. So on a typical project, it's 90% federal money, 10% state match or local match, whereas in the rest of the country, it's primarily 80-20. The other thing that I'm probably not going to tell you something you don't already know is that we have the lowest gas tax in the country. Our gas tax right now is 8 cents a gallon. We have another almost a penny a gallon that's attributed to, I believe, underground storage tanks. Yeah.
Senator Bishop?
The SPAR fund, we upped that here, a couple years ago?
Correct. Through the chair, Senator Bishop, that's correct. So this is the section that I was referring to, Title 23, Section 118D. This is something that was put into federal law. I believe it was Senator Stevens that put this in way back in the day. It allows us to use funds made available under Title 23 for construction of access and development roads that will serve resource development, recreational, residential, commercial, industrial, or other like purposes. So it's a pretty broad exception that he put in the law for us. Federal highway interprets this to mean public roads. So we've had some discussions in the past about some of the roads that wouldn't be open to the public, that would be resource roads to access oil exploration, mining. If the road's open to the public, we can use federal funds on it. If it's a private road, it's not eligible for federal funds.
If I could, and then if public funds are used, that road then remains public for its life. Is that correct, or how do they work that?
Through the chair, I think the answer to that question is the design life of the road. So. Typical design life for a highway would be, for a highway capital improvement project, would probably be about 20 years. So if we were to use federal funds, that road would have to stay public for the useful life of the road, which would be that. That would be something that would be, that doesn't come up very often, but I think that would be some sort of a negotiation with the Federal Highway Division office on, after we made a publicly funded investment in a road, how long would they expect it to stay open to the public before they would allow us to close it and use it as maybe industrial access only. We would have to have a conversation with Fed Highways about that. But I think a rule of thumb would be the design life. So like I said earlier, significant eligibility rules in federal law and state law. So we're constantly looking at the scope of work of projects, the functional class of the road we want to do the work on, and making sure that when we program the STIP that the project is eligible for the fund source that we program on it. Safety projects, there's a separate federal highway program called Highway Safety Improvement Program. HSIP is the typical acronym you hear quite a bit. HSIP projects are required by federal law and regulation to go through a data-driven approach. So they have to do a cost-benefit analysis. There has to be a nexus to improving the safety of the highway if you're going to use HSIP money on it. Surface Transportation Program, or STP funds, those are our most flexible funds. We have that used to come to us in one pot. We used to get a statewide flexible pot. When they passed MAP 21 in 2012, they changed the rules on that. And now we have that money allocated in four pots instead of one. Half of the money comes state flex. We can use it anywhere in the state. And then the other half of the money gets split up between areas of population greater than 200,000, which is the Anchorage area. So the only place we can use that money is in Anchorage. Areas of population 5 to 200,000, which is the urban areas, Fairbanks, Juneau, Ketchikan, Sitka, Wasilla, Soldotna. And then there's another third pot that is for areas less than 5,000 population, which is similar to the statewide flex. It's just about everywhere else. So out of those pots, we give an allocation to the two metropolitan planning organizations. We have one in Anchorage and one in Fairbanks. Anchorage gets the over 200,000 money. That's the only place that money can be spent. So the STP funds that come in that pot are allocated to the AMATs. And then FMATs gets a portion of the 5 to 200,000. So one of the issues with the STP program is because it's so flexible, it's in high demand. And when the Congress passed MAP 21, I mentioned earlier that they condensed the number of programs that the funding came in. The STP funding went down, and the NHPP, the National Highway Performance Program money, which is for the higher classification of roads like the arterials, principal arterials, and interstate system, that funding went up. And so basically what they were doing was asserting what the federal interest is. The federal interest is in the interstate system, national defense, interstate commerce. The higher classification roads are the ones that carry most of that traffic. So when Congress passed MAP 21, they focused more on NHPP, which created a problem for us under STP, the Surface Transportation Program. There was less money, but still a significant demand. So we've had a backlog of projects on our STP funding for a while that we've been trying to work through. And you'll see that in the STIP, that there's not any new design starts in the STP program in the STIP because we have ongoing projects that we have to complete before we can start any new ones. So, like I said, Surface Transportation Program, in the FAST Act, they changed it. Although they didn't change the rules, they changed the name of it to the Surface Transportation Block Grant. It's not really a block grant. I think there was some intent that they were going to turn it into a block grant to each state, but in the end, they didn't change the eligibility or the requirements of the program. They just changed the name of it. The program is lined out in Title 23, which is the same as 23 United States Code, Section 133. basically what it says is you can use STP funds for the construction, and construction's broadly defined as anything leading to construction, so design, right-of-way, environmental, and actual physical construction. Highways, bridges, tunnels, ferry boats, and terminals. You can send that money from Federal Highway over to Federal Transit if you want to do a transit project under Title 49, which is the big law for USDOT. Title 23 just applies to Federal Highway. Title 49 is all of USDOT. You can use STP funds for infrastructure-based intelligent transportation systems, truck parking facilities. There's a long list in under 133. It's quite flexible, and you know, if we could have a whole program of STP funds, we'd probably be all a lot happier. Operational improvements, capital and operating costs for traffic monitoring, management systems, environmental projects, highway and transit safety improvements, protection of bridges for scour or seismic protection, and then we can also use STP for planning projects.
Maybe before you jump to the next slide, at some point I'd like you to touch on return of funds if we have a project that doesn't materialize as expected. I'm referring to a couple of ferry terminals southeast here. Senator Wilson has arrived. Let's join the meeting.
Through the chair, that issue is something we're working on with Federal Highway right now. So the issue is if we use federal funds to build a facility, and your specific question is for a ferry terminal, with the expectation that we have a business need for that ferry terminal and we're going to offer service there, and then that business need goes away, whether that's because the business is not profitable or not economical or not stable enough to keep running. We're in discussions right now with Federal Highway and the Federal Transit Administration on how much of those funds we would have to pay back if we do not continue to use the ferry terminal for its intended purpose.
Okay. And we'll bring this up in more detail, I think, as those conversations materialize.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike, so no ferry terminal is profitable, although we pay a toll to ride on the ferry system. Nobody else does, well, except for a few toll roads and way up north. But you're saying it has to be profitable. Well, no terminal is profitable.
Through the chair, Senator Egan, I didn't say that it has to be profitable. I just said that it would have to be an ongoing business enterprise. And I understand and I agree with you that the marine highway system in Alaska and certainly in other parts of the country, there is a subsidy that has to be provided in order to keep that operation going forward. And
let me just stop there for a second, because let's clarify for those watching at home or someplace else. The question could have been a little clearer from me to the DOT representative, but it's dealing with the Kaufman Cove Ferry Terminal that was constructed along with South Mitkoff Highway, looking at a shuttle ferry basically between Kaufman Cove on North Prince Wales Island to Wrangell to Petersburg and back on that triangle. And that business model didn't work out as expected, so those terminals have very light use, and we're trying to, as a state, work through that issue of the construction cost of those two terminals and how their use is going to be. It's not for the broader marine highway. It's really geared right into those two capital projects.
Well,
but Senator Ian.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree, but if you want to get down to semantics, no ferry terminal is profitable in Alaska,
right,
even though we subsidize the system. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So back to how projects are selected for the STIP. For the first time in this current draft STIP, we have used data specifically to score projects. So in the past, there was, I mean, we've always had pavement condition data and bridge condition data, but we made a formal effort to use data to prioritize projects. So we looked at things like safety considerations of the project. Is it going to improve the safety of the road? Is the pavement condition in such a state that it needs immediate treatment? Is the bridge condition, is it a structurally deficient bridge? What's the traffic count on that road? Is it a high traffic, low traffic? And then we had some unique benefits, like if it's on the interstate system, if it, one of the challenges we have developing projects is getting a project through the environmental process, getting the permits and all of that. So we gave a project extra points if it was through the environmental process, and that kind of leads to the term shovel ready. If the project has been through NEPA, then that means that the project is going to move forward a little quicker, and so we gave that extra consideration in order to move the project forward. So I think what you're seeing when you look at the STIP is our first attempt to actually quantify that. Now, one of the things that we did when we developed the STIP, and this is something that we've done, this is the first new STIP that we've done in this way, is we brought together a team of DOT folks. So we had all the planning chiefs. We have a planning chief in Juneau, one in Anchorage, one in Fairbanks. And we brought the pre-construction engineer. So that's basically the lead pre-construction engineer in each of the three regions, so Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau. We brought them all together, and we went through each project, each National Highway Performance Program-funded project. And we talked about each project. We looked at the scope. We looked at the data, and we prioritized the projects. And so as you're looking through this document, you're going to see projects that we felt rose to the top based on engineering judgment, planning judgment, and data. So I think at this point we have a better program than we've had in the past.
What we're going to try to do is, when there's questions, get to the end of the slide, and then I'll pause for questions. Senator Egan.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just quickly, was anybody from FHWA included in your scoping when you guys met, or was that separate?
Through the chair, Senator Egan, Federal Highway was not present at that meeting.
But then you presented your findings to FHWA.
Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll shut up.
All right, fine. Go ahead. Continue.
So, again, another program, the Highway Safety Improvement Program. So there is a line in the STIP for the Highway Safety Improvement Program. HSIP projects have to go through a benefit-cost analysis. Projects selected and funded with HSIP funding, there has to be a documented safety issue that we're trying to fix. And one thing that's new for us is the HSIP program in the past has been eligible for engineering solutions, but also for education and enforcement and for emergency response. And we have used some of the HSIP money in the past to fund local law enforcement, to fund the state troopers in certain parts of the state. And when Congress passed the FAST Act, they took that option away from us. The only thing you can use HSIP funds now is for engineering solutions, and that was a decision made by the Senate when they were developing the FAST Act. So that limits our flexibility on what we can do with the HSIP money.
Several years ago, we had some presentations at Finance. I think maybe Senator Egan might have been there. We had the safety corridors where they were having problems up on the wall. We went through the areas. They were all up north, you know, Mat-Su and around Anchorage, and we put forward through the STIP process quite a build-out plan to deal with the safety corridors. And as I'm going over the subject, it'd be nice, I think, to have that an update to the Transportation Committee sometime, and I'll have my staff get with you guys on just the safety corridors, because we continue to hear that we have safety issues on some of the highways, so there's probably more work to be done, and maybe not all the work that we were looking at was done, for all I know. It was several years ago, but it would be nice to have that update, because it does, safety is pretty high on the list of trying to deal with allocation of scarce resources.
Through the chair, absolutely, that's true. And some of those projects that you're referring to, you may see in this STIP, because they're, it takes a while to develop a project, to get it through the permitting, to get the design done, to get the right-of-way, and to get it to construction. And there's several projects on the Seward Highway, which is one of the safety corridors, and on the Parks Highway through MATSU that are funded in this for construction. So probably some of those projects that you're thinking about, you're going to see in here coming to construction in 2018. So back to how we select projects. So under state regulation, we have something called the Community Transportation Program. This is a program that's under state regulations, but it's funded with federal money. So this is something that in the past we have funded with STP money. Again, I talked about that earlier, about our backlog of STP funds. Our hope was that we were going to be able to create some space in this draft STIP to include Community Transportation Program projects. Once we got through the balancing and determining fiscal constraint, it became obvious that we don't have any available funds at this point. So earlier I mentioned that we don't have any new STP-funded design starts in this STIP, and the reason for that is that we are trying to hold the line so that when we get maybe another year from now, we will have an ability to go out and do a solicitation for projects and add some of those in. But once you start a federal project, there's an expectation that you bring it all the way through to construction. And so it's difficult to move an active project out of the STIP in order to put a new project in. So what we'll probably see is when we start the development of the next round of developing a STIP, we will do a call for projects and try to bring some of those community projects in, because we know there's a demand out there. And it's been a few years since we've been able to do that because of the change in MAP, when we saw MAP 21 and the increase in the focus on the national highway system. It's been difficult to get all those projects in. And, you know, I think it's a pretty safe statement to say that we always will have more needs than we have resources. And so that's one of the balancing acts that we're constantly faced with, is how do we prioritize projects? How do we get all the projects funded when we only are limited to what we get from the federal government? So we're doing the best we can, and we're hoping that we can push that program out to the public in the next round. So earlier I mentioned the allocations to the MPOs. Anchorage and Fairbanks both get an allocation of the STP money based on population, and they go through, they have their own process, both in Anchorage and Fairbanks. They select projects, they prioritize projects, and they do something called a TIP, which is the local version of our STIP. It's a Transportation Improvement Program. The MPOs develop it, they take a lot of public comment, and then it goes through their process with their policy committees and their local governments. And then those TIPs come to us at DOT for review and approval. Some other funding that we get is CMAQ money, which is congestion mitigation and air quality. The bulk of that money goes to the Fairbanks area because they're non-attainment for air quality for both, for mostly a PM 2.5. I believe PM 10 is also an issue for them. But that's controlled by Department of Environmental Conservation. They put together a state implementation plan. Projects are identified in the state implementation plan, and the mandatory CMAQ money and the PM 2.5 CMAQ money is programmed through that state improvement program. Anchorage and Eagle River are in a maintenance area, and so the AMATS also gets an allocation of CMAQ funds, and they prioritize those projects. And then the Juneau Valley is also in non-attainment for PM10. And so they get, mostly that's wood smoke. It's similar in some ways to what's going on in Fairbanks.
Senator Wilson, you have a question?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the allocations for the MPOs, how does that change if there's a third or a fourth added later on in the system?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, what happens is the money just gets split three ways. So we're a minimum allocation state, so there's two pots of money that go to the MPOs. One is metropolitan planning money, and we get a set amount of metropolitan planning money, and right now that gets split between Anchorage and Fairbanks. And so assuming you're referring to the expected census in 2020 that will create the opportunity for the Wasilla-Palmer area to create an MPO, they would get a split of that metropolitan planning money. And then the same thing would be the case for the surface transportation program funds, the $500,000 to $200,000. Once the MPO is formed, then the MPO in MATSU would get an allocation from that pot of money also.
Thank you.
So here's a chart that just shows basically how, you know, a graphic of how we put the STIP together. So we have to comply with federal and state laws. We have an LRTP, and LRTP is our long-range transportation plan. Everything that's done in the STIP has to be consistent with our long-range plan. And then we come to the legislature with a capital budget request. Legislature and passes a capital bill. The governor signs a capital bill. That gives us the authority to spend federal money, and it also provides the state match necessary to obligate the federal funds. And then that goes to project development, our design and construction teams in the regions, and they develop the projects and get them out on the street. So some programming considerations for the STIP. As I said earlier, fiscal constraint, the STIP can only be programmed up to our expected funding level. So every year, the authorizing language, like I said, the FAST Act, provides a certain amount of apportionment that we get from the feds. The annual appropriations bills that Congress passes provides obligation authority so that we can obligate those federal funds. And so far right now, we're operating under a continuing resolution from the federal government. That's going to expire at midnight tonight, I believe. And so we're waiting to hear from Congress and the President whether they're going to extend that, whether they're going to shut the government down again. They did that recently. I think it was 2 weeks ago. They didn't get a bill, a continuing resolution passed in time. They shut down the government for, I think, a day and a half, 2 days. The good thing for us is that the Federal Highway Administration has authority to keep on working because they get funding from the Highway Trust Fund. So when they shut down the government, our partners at the division office here in Juneau for Federal Highway were still in the office, were still working. So we're still able to send project agreements and modifications over to them. We're still able to do billings to them because all of our money comes through that Highway Trust Fund. Other agencies weren't so fortunate. I think the National Park Service closed down and some others. So, you know, the issue is if they don't pass an appropriations bill, we're going to be short on obligation authority. So we're hoping that they solve that problem and keep us going forward. Most STIP funding that we have in the document is use or lose, and what I mean by that is the obligation authority that we get in the annual appropriations bill that we apply to the appropriation that we get has to be used each year. So the funding that comes through is good for the year we receive it plus 3 years, but the authority to spend it comes every year. And if we don't use all of that authority, it lapses and goes away. And I'm sure you've heard the term August redistribution. August redistribution happens at the end of each federal fiscal year. That federal fiscal year ends in September. August redistribution means that obligation authority that wasn't used in other areas gets put into a pot and gets redistributed. So we've been pretty successful with that the last couple of years. We've put a request into Federal Highway, and I think last year we received around $23 million additional authority to spend, and the year before that we were around $27, $28 million. So that's a nice thing to have at the end of the year. We've used up all of our obligation authority. We still have a couple projects going. We can get that funding, get another project out on the street. So that's been a nice bonus for us. In Alaska and nationwide, we're looking at this document, and you'll see a lot of stuff in here. projects take a long time to develop, and there's a lot of reasons why projects get hung up, whether it's an environmental issue, it's a permitting issue, a right-of-way issue. So about 30% of our projects end up slipping out of this. So in 18, when you're looking through this list, there's a good bet that there'll be about 30% of those that don't get to construction. I'm just talking phase four, but they don't get to construction for some reason. And so what we have in here is some tools and some flexibility with Federal Highway that we can move things around. So if there's a project in here that's scheduled to go to construction, to be obligated for construction in 18, and it gets hung up for some reason, we can pull a project from 19 forward and obligate the funds on that project. So we do have a little bit of flexibility. And then I'm sure you've heard the term advanced construction. That's popped up a lot over the last few years. What advanced construction allows us to do is to move a project forward with approval from Federal Highway without an actual obligation of federal funds. And so what we've been doing with advanced construction is managing that and doing obligations as we see expenditures in order to not impact the state treasury. So as soon as we start seeing expenditures of any significance, we can do a modification of that project with Federal Highway and then ask for reimbursement. So what it's allowed us to do is get a little more work out on the street at any given time without impacting our reimbursements coming back from the feds as we pay contractors. So here's a pie chart that shows basically how the funding comes to us, 2018 FAST Act funding. You can see the big blue piece of the pie is the National Highway Performance Program. That's the bulk of the money. That funding is for the interstate and the principal arterial system. So those roads are, the main highways like Parks Highway, Glen Highway, Alaska Highway, Dalton Highway, Sterling, Seward. Roads like Egan Drive is considered National Highway System. I believe parts of South Tongass and Ketchikan. Some roads in Haines Highway, Klondike Highway, and then, like University Ave in Fairbanks, Airport Way in Fairbanks, a bunch of roads in Anchorage, our national highway system. The red slice there is the surface transportation program funds. That, again, is that flexible funding. You can see that's a little bit smaller. And then after that, you've got the highway safety improvement, the CMAQ money, the metropolitan money. And then the new program, the National Highway Freight Program, is that orange piece. We get about $15 million a year in the freight program. And the freight money is available and eligible for any project on the National Highway Freight Network, which for Alaska right now is the interstate system. Within that language in the FAST Act, we have the ability to designate urban and rural critical freight corridors, and our expectation is that the Dalton Highway will be tagged as the rural freight corridor, and then on the urban freight corridors, the conversation is to allow the two MPOs, Fairbanks and Anchorage, to identify freight corridors in the urban area that they want. And that's limited to a certain number of miles by law.
One of the two boys has a question. Twitching. Is that you, Senator Bishop?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are we done with Shackwack funds?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, yes. In short.
Define Shackwack for the people at home.
So SHAC-WAC funding was something that was put in federal authorizing legislation back, I think it was probably in ICE-T, which was way back in the early 90s. Basically, what that means is funding for projects in Canada. So it was funding for highway projects that would connect the Haines Highway to the Alaska Highway. And so it's named after a geological formation, I guess, called the SHAC-WAC Trench, which is where the road follows. And that funding was made available through the federal government. That didn't come through Alaska DOT. It was made available through the federal government. Federal Highway Administration in Juneau here managed that program and made that money available to the Yukon DOT. And in MAP 21, Congress eliminated that program. So I thought...
So you passed the history test.
Thank you. I've been around a little while. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about FAST Act just to give you some information about what we're dealing with and what the FAST Act did for us. It was passed by Congress in December 2015, a modest increase over the funding that we receive. Initially, it was about a 5% increase for Fed highways and a 16% increase for transit. And since then, it's been 1.5-2% a year increase on our apportionments. For Alaska, we will get about $2.6, $2.7 billion over the 5 years of the bill. It averages about $531 million a year over the 5 years. So it's a pretty good deal for us. It's a good chunk of money. For FTA, it's about $268 million, averages about $53 million. The majority of that goes to the Anchorage and Fairbanks transit operators. The state DOT, we get about $8 million of that we hand out in grants to small transit operators around the state. We have a proposal process where they put in and ask for funding for operation subsidy, new buses, that sort of thing. The other thing in the FAST Act is it maintains our ferry boat program at about $18 million plus or minus annually. In years past, we had something called ferry boat discretionary money, and Alaska received what they call a lop off the top of that pot, and then the rest of the money was competitive. You had to put a proposal in the Federal Highway to get funded. When they passed MAP 21, they created the ferry boat program, which is a formula-driven process, and that has there's three pieces to that. It's number of route miles you run your ferry system, the number of vehicles you carry, and the number of passengers you carry. And so that's treated us pretty well considering where we were before. We've been able to maintain what that funding is coming in for the Marine Highway System. Additionally, Ketchikan Gateway Borough receives some money for their ferry that runs over to the airport, and the IFA, Inter-Island Ferry Authority, that runs between Ketchikan and Hollis receives an annual appropriation from the ferry boat program also. Both of those are considerably less. I think they're a couple hundred thousand dollars for IFA and a little bit more than that for Ketchikan. The FAST Act also increases tribal transportation program funds nationally from 450 to 465, and then $10 million increments. Alaska tribes get, I think I actually have that number here, I think it's around $60 million a year. That funding doesn't come through DOT. It goes directly to the tribes through either Federal Lands Highway, which is a branch of Federal Highway Administration, or Bureau of Indian Affairs. And the tribes get about $50 million a year from the tribal program. As we talked about earlier, the formula-based national freight program, we get right around $16 million on average each year through the FAST Act. And then there's also a continuation of the Transportation Alternatives Program. Back in the day, there was something called Transportation enhancements. Sorry, I had a little brain cramp there. TE program. And basically that's bike and ped, historic preservation, that sort of thing. So we still a recreational trail. So we still get about $6 million a year for the TAP program. $1.5 million of that goes over to the Department of Natural Resources, which manages the recreational trails program through their Parks Division.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The increase of the tribal transportation programs, do you know, does DOT partner with the tribes? Do you know how that money is used in coordination with maybe state projects, or is that just mostly for more public transportation needs or social service needs, or just how is that allocated throughout?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson. Yes, we partner with the tribes. We've been working hard to make that a better relationship. None of that funding comes through us. They get it directly from the federal agencies, whether that's Federal Highway or BIA. There's some unique features about the tribal transportation program that allow them more flexibility than what we have as a state DOT. They can use that tribal money for maintenance. They can use it for transit. They can use it for highways. They can use it for airports. They are required to put together a transportation improvement program, a TIP, just like we do the STIP and the MPOs do a TIP. We get copies of those, and we have regular conversations with them. One of the other things that they can do with that tribal money is they can use that as match. So that's pretty unusual that you can use federal money to match other federal money. So if a tribe has federal TTP, as they call it, they can come to us and propose that they can use that money as match on a project to leverage some STP money that we would have. So that's a work in progress. I mean, the governor has created his tribal advisory council, and we're participating in that. We're having regular conversations with the tribes. We talk to Federal Highway and BIA on a regular basis. So we're trying to improve that relationship and make that more beneficial for everybody.
Thank you.
So again, on the FAST Act, to generally maintain what happened in MAP 21, you know, there were some things in MAP 21 that they were trying to do, streamline an environmental process. They began the freight program, but it got solidified under the FAST Act. And then they also created the beginnings of a performance-based program management system where they're going through the NPR's national proposed rulemaking. They're creating performance measures for safety, for pavement condition, for bridge condition, and we're continuing to work with Federal Highway and develop an asset management system that will comply with those performance measures that they're developing on a national level. Federal Lands Access Program. So this has come up a few times. You should have a handout that has a large piece of paper with very small print on it. That's it right there. That is the Federal Lands Access Program. It's about $8 million a year. And the intent of the Federal Lands Access Program is to provide funding to improve access to or across federal lands. And the program is administered by Federal Highway Administration. There's an office in Vancouver, Washington, Western Federal Lands Highway Division. They do the call for projects. They have a project decision committee that reviews all the proposals and scores the projects and selects the projects. The members of that are set in the law. So it's a state DOT representative. I'm the state DOT representative for the Federal Lands Access Program. The planning chief for Western Federal Lands down in Vancouver is the Federal Highway Rep. And then what the law says is that there has to be a representative to represent the political subdivisions of the state. In our case, that's the executive director of the Alaska Municipal League. So the three of us, Pete Field, Kathy Wasserman, and myself, review the projects after they've been scored, the projects are scored by representative from each of the federal land management agencies. So it's the Forest Service, the BLM, National Park Service, Fish and Wildlife Service, and the Army Corps of Engineers. And in order to get a project funded through FLAP, you have to fill out an application, and you have to get approval sign-off basically by the federal land management agency that is involved in that. So if your project is going to cross Forest Service land or provide access to Forest Service land, Forest Service representative has to sign off on the application. If it's BLM, the BLM person has to sign off on the application. And you'll see, I'm not going to go through that list of projects, but I wanted to provide it to you so you had some sense of what kind of projects get funded. You'll notice that that almost all of those projects are not delivered by DOT. There's a couple projects on there where it's the project that was proposed is tied to one of our projects, but I think there's only two there. All of the other projects are either delivered by a local government in the state or one of the other land management agencies or by Western Federal Lands themselves. Unfortunately, it's not a lot of money, but we do get a lot of interest in the program. The program is limited to $2 million per application, so you know, there's a lot of bigger projects that that get some funding from the FLAP program, but they need to find other money. So in some ways it works out pretty good because they're leveraging. They get a little bit of FLAP money, they get some money from local sources, maybe they get some money from one of the federal land management agencies, and sometimes we're able to contribute some money to get something done. So it works pretty well for the size of the program that it is. And then the Tribal Transportation Program, jointly administered by Federal Highway and BIA. Some tribes in the state are BIA tribes. Some tribes in the state are Federal Highway tribes. It depends on who they wanted to sign an operating agreement with. They do, as we just spoke about, they do their own transportation improvement program. Those have to be sent in to either BIA or Western Federal Lands at Federal Highway, and we get copies of those. Again, about $50 million a year. None of this money comes through us. It all goes directly to the tribes. Coordination and communication between the tribes, the federal agencies, and state and local agencies is critical. We've been trying to improve that, like I said earlier, with the governor's tribal advisory council has brought a bunch of people together to talk about this. We have a tribal liaison position that we've created. Anna Boson is our tribal liaison. She's been doing great work talking to the tribes, coordinating with them, coordinating with Department of Law, trying to get issues resolved. And like I said, they have a unique ability to use that federal money as match on another federally funded project. So we're trying to make that happen too. So we'll go back to the STIP, and these slides are screenshots of our website. So if anybody wants to go out and look at the draft STIP, they can go out. They can, or actually, if they want to look at the STIP, the draft is a PDF document that looks like a giant spreadsheet. It's about 50 pages. There's a spot that you can click on and bring up the draft. You can save it as a PDF. You can print it out. You can, I'm not sure if you can bring it into an Excel. I don't think that works right now. But there's a lot of tools out on our website that you can go out and do searches, look for projects on certain roads and certain communities funded by a certain funding source. So basically what I want to do is just walk through and show you some of these and encourage everybody to go out there and look around and familiarize themselves with what's out there. Like I said, the public comment period ends March 15th, and we'd love to hear from anyone who has an interest in this and whatever comments they have.
I take it these are not interactive. We can't rearrange the priority of the STIP?
No, you won't be able to, but you can comment on that, but you can't do it yourself.
Just clarifying for the committee members.
So here's another screenshot. This is our STIP homepage, and you can see some of the arrows. The top arrow shows you where the needs list is, and there's a search tool for active projects. So if you know there's a project in your area that you're interested in, you can click on that. You can find the project. You can see how much the estimate is. You can see who the project manager is. There's contact information there to call the project engineer who's working the project. The bullet, the radio button in the middle, it says STIP. That is the PDF version of the STIP. So that's each project is on its own page. It's maybe a little more user friendly, but it's larger. So I typically do the search the STIP, which is down in the lower left. You click on that, and it will bring up a filtering system, and you can click on whether you want to look at a particular region's projects, a particular town's projects, if you want to look at a certain highway, like all the projects on the Seward Highway or all the projects on the Haines Highway, Parks Highway, you can click on that, and you can bring up subsets of the STIP to look at particular things. It's a pretty powerful tool, and it gives you a lot of information. Off to the side is a STIP. It's that last arrow is STIP project view map. So we've got this tied to GIS, and if you click on that, it brings up a map of the state. It has dots on the map where all the projects are. You put your mouse over on that dot, and it'll bring up a little box. You can click on it. It'll bring up another map that's a little bit more of a closer view. Again, needs list, search, and then the active project. So these are just more screenshots of what we were looking at before. When you click on one of those, it'll bring you to one of these screens. Again, I would suggest to anyone listening, if they want to know more about the STIP, to go out and look around. There's lots of information out there. So this is the STIP search tool. So if you click on that, it brings up this filter. And like I said, you can click on region, place name, election district. You can look up a bridge number, a particular highway. If you're interested in projects on the Haines Highway, you can click on Haines Highway. It'll bring up all those projects. You can look at all the projects in a borough funded by a certain flavor of federal money. And then you can select on what information you want to see. Again, this is a pretty powerful tool. You know, instead of looking at the big document with all the lines, you can get a little bit more specific information, tailor it to your needs. And then here's a picture of the map. Each one of these dots is a project. And so if you put your mouse over one of those dots when you're on the website, it'll bring up a little bit of information. If you click on it, it'll bring up more information. And then I wanted to end with some notable projects in the STIP. So I just went through and picked out some of the bigger projects that are in the STIP and gave you a quick status of each of those. So Senator Stedman, you asked earlier about the highway safety corridor, so the Seward Highway, mile point 74 to 90. This project was advertised in January. It hasn't been awarded yet. It's $90 million. It's got four bridge replacements or rehabs in it, and that we should be awarding that project. I'm guessing they'll open bids in another month or so. And Glen Highway, South Inner Springer Loop to Old Glen. We're hoping to advertise that project this April. $49 million project. What I did is I went through and just looked for construction projects. And obviously, this is just a small subset of what's out there. Parks Highway, Pittman Road to Big Lake Road. This is part of a phased project on the Parks Highway that we've been doing. I believe this is the last piece of that. That one should be going out late this calendar year, be ready to go out to bid. Dalton Highway, again, one of our... What do they say, road to the bank, I guess, is one of the terms we hear about on that quite a bit. That project, we've got a number of projects up on the Dalton. This one's going to be advertised probably early 2019. Richardson Highway, this one's up in the Fairbanks area. Again, a tentative advertise of late 2018. And then Skagway State Street Rehab, $10.5 million project. That's going to go out this summer. That one's been in the pipeline for a while. Here in Juneau, Egan Drive, Main Street to 10th, so that's going to be right down here, the bottom of the hill, all the way out to the bridge. That one's going out in May. And then last one on the list is Ketchikan, North Tongass, the waterfall, creek bridges. There's two bridges there. That's going out in March. And of course, there's a lot more out there. I just wanted to pick a few projects off that might be of interest, and they're some of the bigger projects that are in the STIP.
Finishing final questions from the committee. Senator Egan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had all kinds of questions, but we can do that later. I'm concerned about pedestrian safety and sidewalks on especially state highways. A lot of our sidewalks are on municipal land and done by the muni. And we did get some money one time in the STIP to do sidewalk rehabilitation or construction. We have a project going on this summer on Douglas Highway, connecting Gastineau School with a bunch of development. And I just wondered if there's any more federal money that can be used for sidewalk construction or pedestrian safety.
Through the chair, Senator Egan, the answer is yes to all those questions.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. So that project you're referring to, the sidewalk project to Gastineau School, that was funded through the old Safe Routes to School program that was initiated under the old authorizing Bill Safety Lou.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that, but that doesn't exist anymore, correct?
That's correct, yeah. So the eligibility for the Safe Routes to School program is still there. It's under the Surface Transportation Program. So we can fund those projects with Surface Transportation Program funds. The TAP program is also the Transportation Alternatives Program. That's also a subset of the STP program. And then we're also encouraged to do accommodate all users. So if we're doing a project on the NHS, and we have lots of examples of those, we incorporate that work, either a sidewalk or a crossing project, in the construction project when we're redoing the road, and those are eligible for whatever program funds are on that project. So there's multiple ways to get sidewalks and crossings funded through the capital improvement program.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking back at some of the programming considerations for SIP funding, it's use or lose. Is there any permitting issues that sometimes can be holed up through either federal or state issues, or what I believe was in the other body now, House Bill 199, or the potential initiative that could actually stop sort of the STIP programming from occurring?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, there's always permitting issues and process issues with construction projects. And so we're always working through those. I'm not familiar with the bill you're referencing, though, in the other body.
Mr. Chair, this is that Clean Water Initiative or Save the Salmon Initiative type of piece of legislation. I just didn't know if that would impact sort of the use it or lose it if they can't carry over from year to year, if there's potential pieces of litigation or additional processes that could stop permitting, how that may impact the sort of STIP process.
Just a short answer, because I think that's going to be a subject matter for
through the chair, Senator Wilson. That's always an issue. I don't know what the impacts of that particular bill will be, but as far as dealing with the use it or lose it issue, that's the flexibility that I was talking about, where if we have a project that's scheduled to go to construction in 18 and that project gets hung up because of a permit need or something like that, we have built-in flexibility in the STIP that we'll be able to pull a project forward. We do not lose federal money. And I can say that unequivocally, that we're not going to go there. So we'll always figure that out.
Unless they gum up the entire system, I think that's your question.
Yeah.
So we'll deal with that. Historically, that's been true. We're concerned about going forward having the whole system gummed up, so you can't move anything forward, virtually. But we'll bring that as a separate subject, I think, Senator Wilson. I think that's a good question. Any other questions for the department? Senator Egan.
I have a question for you, Mr. Chair. I'm assuming we'll have the department back before.
Of course, this is the Transportation Committee.
Well, good.
Well, I'd like to go through, and I've talked to him about going through each region, okay. South Coast region, Central region, Northern region. You know, we can touch on the safety projects, the safety corridors, so we can get a kind of a broader feel of across the state where the needs are, where the funds are going today, and where DOT thinks the needs are coming, assuming we get a major construction project, a gas line coming, because that's definitely going to make huge impacts on bridges and roads, and amongst other things. So to kind of give the committee a better background, also that'll help lay the groundwork for the Finance Committee when they deal with the capital budget. So hopefully a lot of this stuff could be done here instead of upstairs at the finance table, make it a little easier. So Mr. Big U is not out of the hot box yet, but he's working his way towards the door.
Good.
Any other questions? Okay, we're going to post here pretty quick what we're going to do next week. This meeting is adjourned today at 3:42 p.m. We are adjourned.